Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Marius Ruit. Let's get into the first news story of today, and this is a fascinating little story in, I think it was News 24 who reported it, which really, I think, pulls the rug away from a lot of infighting that's been going on within the ANC. So it does seem to me as though the anti-GNU forces, principally Panyaza Lesufi, are feeling a little bit worried about the attacks on them. And you can see this in the story from News 24, which is titled, Mbalula's attempt to charge Lesufi for claimed anti-GNU remarks appears to have fallen flat. Now, what's very interesting about this story is I think it basically has one main source who, judging from what this source sounds like and the quotes that are given anonymously to News 24, you get the very strong impression that either the person who is the source is Panyaza Lesufi or someone who's very close to him, a good friend of his. Anyway, what happened is that it describes a tense meeting when apparently after a letter dated October 6, Fikile Mbalula, the Secretary General of the ANC, wrote to Lesufi saying that he had, quote, observed with concern your public utterances with matters pertaining to the GNU and the coalitions in local municipalities, and that said public utterances go against the resolutions made by the National Executive Committee. The letter from Mbalula went on to say, you would recall that the NEC elaborately discussed the aftermath of the unfavorable electoral outcome, which henceforth was characterized as a significant and strategic setback, and that mindful of the pitfalls of the various options that availed, the NEC ultimately resolved that the GNU was the most viable option. In contrast, your public articulations seem to argue in contradiction to the NEC resolution in this regard, thereby bringing the ANC into public disrepute. Ordinary, any organization that fails to observe the basic tenets of organization with respect to principles of democratic centralism naturally invites such public disrepute and ridicule of its leadership. Anyway, the source then claims that Mbalula, in this meeting before the ANC's leadership, attempted to accuse Lesufi of violating the party's constitution and undermining the party's public perception. Now, according to this very pro-Lesufi source, Lesufi responded with what are described as quote-unquote facts, that the ANC wasn't protecting Lesufi enough, and that at the end of the day, they essentially decided to just leave the matter lie, according to the source quote. The call was made, comrades, let's leave this, we are done. This is where the president intervened and asked for comrades to calm down. He said that they have heard both Lesufi and ANC Gauteng secretary and said that they could both leave the meeting. It fell apart. It was tense, but more than anything, the meeting exposed that Mbalula is gone. He is answering to Boers, said the source. Marius, what do you make of all this? I mean, we're only hearing one side of the story here, so I really wonder if this fight inside the ANC was as one-sided as the source seems to claim. In fact, the fact that this was so aggressively leaked to the media makes me think that maybe things were not quite as clear-cut as this. What do you think?
Yeah, I think you should take it with a pinch of salt. And we're going to start, I mean, we're going to see these kinds of fights, I think, between various factions in the ANC. I think it's actually pretty healthy that it's been done in public, so to speak. But there's just a couple of things. I mean, this kind of crass racialization, talking about how Balula's listening to the Boers and all this kind of rubbish. Solimapa Yila of the South African Communist Party's also said that the Boers are somehow in control of South Africa again because the ANC is in coalition with the DA. So it gets all pretty, you know, it's pretty ridiculous. But also, I mean, just shows you how much South African politics has changed in the last couple of months. The fact that Fikile Mbalula is kind of representing your sensible faction in the government. It's something to behold, really. But I do think, I mean, it's interesting. I wonder if Panyaza Lesufi is feeling under a bit of pressure. I mean, Gauteng, it was a very bad election for the ANC in Gauteng. They lost 15 points. And you can't even blame that all on MK. MK just got just under 10% of the votes in Gauteng. So it wasn't just the ANC voters didn't they lost to other parties as well. And the EFF also went backwards in this election, so in Gauteng. So you can't blame the EFF either. So the ANC is under a lot of pressure in the province. And just remember, Lesufi is the premier, but he only got voted in thanks to the DA, actually, and now he's running a minority government. So I think the ANC, not just Lesufi, but I think also from President Ramaphosa down, they still haven't really accepted the fact that they have lost their majority. We've seen how the ANC is acting still. They're still acting as if they're a majority party in parliament and in Gauteng. And I think they're probably still in the denial stage of grief at the moment. Hopefully they get the acceptance stage soon if we want the GNU to work properly.
You know, very definitely. And, you know, if you just believed some of the reporting that's come out, because it's clear to me that the sort of pro-Lesufi faction has been very aggressively leaking news. He's also been, the Gauteng ANC has been putting out these extremely sort of over-the-top media statements saying things like, you know, that we are being undermined and Helen Ziller is spreading lies and that the ANC has never been divided ever before. And all sorts of like very over-the-top media statements. And one gets the feeling that the lady doth protest too much. And I wonder whether this media report will force Mbulula to respond because it is such an aggressive attack on him and such a sort of demeaning attack on him. Perhaps it will. And one wonders, I mean, you know, I think everyone in the ANC has a case to make almost against everyone else. You could say about Ramaphosa and Mbulula, you led the party nationally into its worst election result ever. But as you said, Marius, you can equally turn around and say, Lesufi has also led the party into destruction in Gauteng, where this is really a province where the sort of non-MK ANC, the non-MK EFF ANC bloc, I would say, in some ways went backwards. Anyway, fascinating to watch. And I think this is all prepping up for the ANC's next elective conference in, I think it's 2026, when the sort of future of that party's direction, I think, increasingly looks like it's going to be decided. Is it going to stay where it is as a sort of far-left party that's not particularly interested in governing the country well and is more interested in sort of racializing everything? Or is it going to move in the direction of being maybe a more social democratic party, as Mbulula has suggested it should? Something more akin to, I don't know, Britain's Labour Party or something like that. Okay, let's move on to our next story. And this is one of these stories, I think, that really describes just how stupid all of the sort of race laws and the focus on race are in South Africa. The first question asked of Judge Philip Koppen, who was being interviewed before the Judicial Services Commission for his placement as a judge, was what his racial identity was. He responded to this saying, quote, "I wanted to get something out of the way for me for the outset. It's a nasty question, but a necessary one. We live in South Africa, and this is an issue for us and the issue of your race." Sorry, this is the person interviewing. "You've described yourself as colored in your form, which is what should guide us. But one of the professional bodies has written in and said you're a white male. And so will you assist? Are you a white male?" Koppen said in response, "I don't know which white male would be born in Kliptown, Soweto, and attend Noordkusuk Secondary School. In any event, to put the record straight, I've got nothing against white males. They can also make a valuable contribution. As far as my blackness is concerned, I've always considered myself black." He then expounded on his upbringing. He said he was born in 1961 in Kliptown, that he's biracial. He has both white and black relatives, and that he was raised mostly in a black South African community in Joburg, and then went on to talk about how his life was quite difficult for him before eventually managing to rise through the ranks and become a legal professional. But Marius, you know, the fact that there was some sort of professional association writing to the JSC to rat him out for what, not being black enough, is just outrageous.
It's this really weird kind of neo-McCarthyism, you know. It's like asking, do you currently or have you ever identified as a Caucasian or something? You know, and that's like kind of some kind of black mark against your name. But it just shows, I mean, this also, I mean, what a demeaning question to a person. And as I was saying before the show, it reminds me of in the 2015 Rugby World Cup when the squad for the tournament, the Springbok squad, was announced, and obviously you had your racial bean counters going. This was how many whites are in the squad, how many blacks, how many coloured people. Then came to Damien Ndilenda, And some people are like, no, I think he's colored. Other people, no, I think he's white. And Damon Dalende's father had to come out and say, no, well, actually, we're white. But you shouldn't. I mean, it's just such a demeaning, ridiculous question. And I mean, it's one of those things, because of the history of this place, you can't really, I mean, it's always going to cast a kind of a shadow. But also, it does cast shadow because we make it such a salient part of people's identities. Because we are asking people in these interviews, are you black? Are you white? And it's kind of a, this vicious circle that we continue to be obsessed with it because we are obsessed with it. And if we stop obsessing about it, maybe we can move on from it. And it's also easy for me to say, as a, like I've been obviously suffering under the old regime and all that kind of stuff. But it's, do these kind of this stuff, does it help anybody? Does it
Right.
advance the
We
country in any way?
need to ask the basic question of what exactly is the reason that we focus on race so much. I mean, the kind of usual standard reply is, okay, well, it's a proxy for disadvantage and discrimination in the past, and maybe there's some sort of claim that there's this great structural system in place that is discriminating against people. But it's clear when you listen to this judge's story, if his description of his life is accurate, that he went through many of the same deprivations and difficulties that many Black South Africans have gone through growing up from the 60s, which is when he was born, 1961, and that this, constrained his life choices and made it more difficult for him to succeed. So why shouldn't he be granted the same status? And this is exactly why you should take race out of these analyses. You should look at people's, if you're going to empower people, if you're going to give people an advantage based on their background, then don't look at an arbitrary characteristic like the color of their skin, which has n almost nothing to do actually with your circumstances. I mean, there are people who are white who grew up poor. There are people who are black who grew up rich, particularly nowadays. And instead, look at their circumstances and say, did you come from a poor neighborhood? Did you come from a suffering area? Were you discriminated against in the past? These are very serious things that you can actually look at concrete examples. And we're just leaving that all by the wayside to, as you say, do racial bean counting.
Yeah, just and as you say, I mean, especially now, there has been a lot of change. Obviously, the vast majority of poor people in South Africa are still black, but not all black people are poor, obviously. I mean, I always like to look at the example of somebody like Kagiso Rabada. He's one of the greatest players who's ever played cricket for South Africa. He went to St. Stithians. His father was a doctor, his mother was a lawyer. I remember reading an interview with his father. And he said, growing up, Kagiso wanted for nothing. And this is somebody now, I think he was born in 1995, so he's a born free. And that's somebody in no way whatsoever can you say he's disadvantaged. And it's actually pretty racist to say he's disadvantaged just because he's black. Of course, he's not disadvantaged. And being black is not a disadvantage. It's like saying you're handicapped for some reason because you're born with a darker skin. It's absolutely ridiculous. And if we looked at things of other ways of identifying people who are actually disadvantaged, the vast majority of people who would get helped would still be black South Africans.
Right, exactly. That's of course the sort of final nail in the coffin for all of this is that if you change to a system that helps people based off of their circumstances rather than based off of their race, you would still find that the overwhelming majority of beneficiaries are black. All right, let's move on to our next story, and this is, I think, maybe good news, but also in some ways not. And I think it reminds us of how we really need to change the way things we're doing things in SA. The Competition Commission has said that it is going to give the go-ahead towards the privatization of the Durban terminal, the port terminal, which has been in a pretty bad state for a while, not been very efficient, ranked behind even other ports in Africa and much poorer African countries. But they've decided they're going to impose some conditions, one of which is that the firm has made commitments towards an employee incentive scheme and will attain a level 4 BBBEE contributor status within 1 year of Transnet being granted the BEE facilitator status. They also make a number of other commitments on racial ownership, and they go on to say that they promise they will not fire anyone for the first 3 years. Now, this is exactly why people don't want to invest in the country, is you do finally get regulatory approval, goes ahead, there's an opportunity to maybe change the way things are done, to maybe improve things, and then the state comes in and says, okay, but you can't fire anyone. Well, what if one of the problems is that they're overstaffed? Morris, what do you make of this?
Yeah, it's obviously not ideal, but I think perhaps it's also thin end of the wedge. This is kind of the crack you need in this opposition to privatization and so on. And like I said, this isn't ideal for people who are coming into Durban, but I think it's a start. And I think this is the only way we're really going to get things working, getting fixed, and so on. And if the company is happy to take on these requirements or whatever the case is, then probably shows that they do think there's value in Durban Port, which I think I'm open to correction. I think it's still the busiest port in Africa, certainly the busiest port in South Africa. And it's something that's, I mean, along with the Eskom issue, that our infrastructure issues and our roads, our railways, and our ports are one of the primary things holding South Africa's economic growth back. So yeah, I think it just I think actually overall it's a positive sign, and hopefully this company that's coming in will be able to make it work.
Indeed, let us hope for the best. At least there is some moving ahead on this. We'll have to see whether there's been a good choice of company made or whether this was an unfortunate example of cronyism. I think that will become apparent probably a year or two from now, and it's something to watch because if this is a success, I think it will perhaps pave the way for more changes and less state control of some of our infrastructure. Anyway, that's all the time we have for today. Hope you found the show interesting. That's a wrap.
The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR, or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.